welcome to the latest Moody on Politics podcast, which is being recorded on July the 17th. It's a Monday and it's about 5 o'clock. This piece, as usual, is based on my most recent blog post, and I haven't had one for a couple of weeks. Actually, I had intended originally posting this last week, but I didn't for a few reasons that I'll return to at the very, very end. Now, I've been saying for a good few weeks that I would do something about Sinn Féin, and this is that piece, because my own view right now is if there was a general election next week, the most likely outcome would be another election. No, naturally enough, there is no general election happening next week or next month. And in reality, barring some major political catastrophe, there's no chance of an election this side of the 2024 local and European elections. But the shape and context of that next election will be framed once the summer recess is over and we get into the budget season. As the government could continue into 2025, polling could be held as late as the start of March 2025. It may yet decide to deliver another budget next year. It is possible, but also unlikely, as the feel-good impact of that budget, assuming the worst to be one, probably wouldn't be felt in voters' pockets until much later in 2021. So assuming the next election will be in late 2024, and the economic parameters of that campaign will be set in the budget due to be announced in early October, I think most speculation settling on Tuesday, October the 10th, as the most likely budget day. What can we say right now about the state of the parties, and in particular about Sinn Féin's prospects of leading the next government? Speaking about a slight dip in Sinn Féin's polling support earlier this year, I think it was around March, I said that I thought then it was presumptive to assert that Sinn Féin's support had peaked too early. 4 months later, I think it not unreasonable to suggest that Sinn Féin's support is flatlining, and that's putting it at mildest. Because there's a certain amount of polling, there's a good amount of polling evidence around across all four regular polling series, that's Red Sea, Ireland Thinks, Ipsos for the Irish Times and BNA for the Sunday Times, that Sinn Féin's support is slipping back marginally. And in the accompanying blog post of this, I charted over the last 12 months those four polling sequences. Now, as I observed in March, Sinn Féin strategists will not be overly concerned by this development, especially as they were a year or more out from the general election. And they know that they've recovered from worse. And by worse, I mean May 2019. In that year, those May local and European elections, the party's vote plummeted. And when I say plummeted, I mean it. It lost half its council seats and 2 out of its 3 MEPs. It was a rout. And though opinion polls either side of those elections had the party in the mid-teens, I think it was 13 or 14% in the polls going into the local elections, and it was back up at 14 or 15% in polls after that summer, on polling day, in ballot boxes, Sinn Féin struggled to get past 10%. I actually got 11% in the Europeans. An internal review conducted, the aftermath of that debacle, found that the parties lay in it being seen just as a party of protest, not a party of solutions. It wasn't a party that looked, acted and sounded like an alternative government. In reality, it was a party that was primarily in competition with People Be For Profit and other parties on the far left. And that was going to limit its vote, and that was going to limit its ability to expand. So, less than 10 months after the electoral mayhem of May 2019, Sinn Féin had not only doubled its vote, hitting 24.5%, it had increased its number of seats. Many thanks are also due with regard to Micheál Martin's disastrous extension of the confidence supply measure to keep Fine Gael in office, but I've commented on that before and I'm not going to go into it here. Now, while Sinn Féin's polling numbers across all polls are consistently and continually now in the low 30s, it still enjoys a double-digit lead over its nearest rival. Now, in some polls, that's Fianna Fáil, and some polls, that's Fine Gael, and some polls, it's both of them on equal numbers. So it depends on which polling series you look. However, those polls and the polling sequence over the last 12 months does not support the notion that Sinn Féin is on some unstoppable march to government. And by the way, neither does the 2021 Dublin Bay South by-election result, where the party dropped 2,000 first preference votes compared to its general election performance that was only 16 months earlier. Think of the general election, its candidate Chris Andrews got a little over 6,000 votes. In the by-election, Lynn Boylan was just over 4,000 first preferences. To be fair, the vote percentage was fairly similar. In both cases, it was around the 16% mark. In fact, Lynn Boylan's vote percentage was down 0.3% compared to Chris Andrews. But that was largely due to an enormous get-out-the-vote operation that the party had within inside the canal. So that right along an area, right up Pierce Street, right back down into the Liberties, there was a big operation to get a vote out. So the turnout down there was much, much higher. The net result of that is that Sinn Féin's vote in those areas was 30, 40, in some boxes even 50, 60%. But because they managed to get their vote out, that masked the fact that the party's vote actually dropped in areas outside the canal, in particular in areas like Rathmines and Donnybrook, which had fairly decent-sized young populations. The excellent Irish polling indicator estimates that Sinn Féin's current support is now within a range of 30.5 to 34%. That's with a 95% probability. And this compares well with the estimated ranges for Fianna Fáil of 18.5% to 22%, and for Fine Gael of 18% to 21.5%. Still shows Fianna Fáil just marginally ahead of Fine Gael in the last couple of polls. So while Sinn Féin is still 8% ahead of its February 22 vote share, and while the two main government parties are roughly 2% behind theirs, respectively, this is an impressive performance by Sinn Féin. But is it government changing? In my opinion, it isn't. The main opposition party should be further ahead of the polls than it is today. I'm not saying it should be 40s and 45, but certainly it should be up in the high 30s. And that's a number it's hit in the past, but it hasn't hit it for a while. Now, this is not to say that Sinn Féin can't turn it around and see its poll numbers again creep back up into the high 30s. But for that to happen, it needs to pull more votes away from the government parties. And in reality, that means hurting Fianna Fáil more than it hurts Fine Gael. And with the government sitting on a big pile of money to spend in October, with Michael McGrath having a big say on where that money's going, I think that's unlikely. So as of today, the political advantage lays with the two main government parties, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And I say that in advance of the upcoming boundary changes. Now, they're not going to give any great advantage to one side or the other. But because Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin will all benefit from having smaller size constituencies. Traditionally, smaller constituencies, 3-4-seaters, mitigates against the smaller parties. And Sinn Féin is certainly no longer a smaller party. And it might help Sinn Féin's cause for smaller parties, Labour, Social Democrats, to say people before profit, to be squeezed a little bit more, because that may be a source of the transfers that Sinn Féin badly need. And that transfer issue is something I'll come to very, very shortly. Now, of course, all of this assumes that everything over the next 12 months continues along the same trajectory as it has over the last 12. And who's going to put money on that? Now, tempting though it is at this juncture to lob in the old Harold Macmillan's "What Decides Elections, Events Dear Boy" quotation, I will instead dip into my copy of Donald Rumsfeld's autobiography and or the Errol Morris documentary about Rumsfeld, The Unknown Known. Speaking at a Pentagon briefing back in the early 2000s, Donald Rumsfeld, who was then Secretary of State for Defence, said, "As we know, there are known knowns. There are things we know. We also know there are known unknowns, i.e. we know there are some things we do not know, but there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know. And if one looks through the history of our country and other free countries, it is the latter category that tends to be the difficult ones." So, while there may be many unknown unknowns which may impact or affect any of the parties and help decide the outcome of the next general election, Sinn Féin has several very significant known knowns, including one or two which I suspect it would prefer not to address. So let's look at two of these known knowns. Now, the first is the resistance of a sizeable chunk of the electorate to the idea of Sinn Féin entering government. I say resistance. In reality, total opposition would be a far better description. For these voters, Sinn Féin is not just linked to the Provost, it is the Provost, and it has been since its inception in 1970. Now, this view was solidified by the party's continued justification of the Provost's campaign of violence and terror, especially by younger party spokespeople with no direct connection to it. Indeed, it was also turbocharged and brought from the historic into the current by the recent Jonathan Dowdall affair. These voters see Sinn Féin senior officials meeting with the royal family and attending such commemoration ceremonies as Armistice Day and the Battle of the Somme, but then see those same officials glorifying Provos at such recent events as the South Armagh Volunteers Commemoration. This celebrated the Provost South Armagh Brigade, which is thought to have murdered over 150 security force members and many countless dozens of civilians. So voters see today's Sinn Féin leadership continuing the Adams rewriting of the history of the last 60 years to portray Sinn Féin and the Provost as some hapless victims of a war that was brought to them, and not the perpetrators of acts of senseless and needless violence that only deepened and prolonged the conflict. Mary Lou MacDonald's recent signals that she would not, as Taoiseach, attend events commemorating the Provost is far from clear-cut. It's been described as ambiguous, and I think it is. Responding to a direct question on attending Provo commemorations, such as the one I just mentioned, or other events which she had attended as leader or deputy leader, she circuitously said, "If I were Taoiseach, there's a set pattern of what the Taoiseach attends and does not attend." Now, an Ireland Thinks Sunday independent poll conducted in June 2023, at the start of that month, sought to discover which was the most transfer toxic party. It asked voters which party they would not support, and not unsurprisingly discovered that the Greens and Sinn Féin came out almost tied for that honour. The Green Party was just fractionally ahead of Sinn Féin, which scored 46% on the "we would never vote for them" scale. Further back, behind AIM 2, and I think People Before Profit, was Fine Gael on 39%. This compared to 36% toxicity for Fianna Fáil. Much lower down was Labour, which is on 23%, the Social Democrats on 18%, and Independents on 6%, and leaders add others who are non-specified, scored lowest at only 2%. None of these numbers are terribly shocking. Parties with strong levels of support usually attract similar levels of antagonism. But as Bertie Ahern's leadership of Fianna Fáil showed in the late 90s, being able to reduce your party's toxicity can be just as electorally advantageous as increasing your first preference vote support. Now, it does appear that Sinn Féin is not just content to live with these levels of perceived toxicity. It may even see them as some kind of driver of support from other sides. It may have concluded that there is a cohort of voters it cannot persuade, or that the words and actions it would need to get that cohort to listen risk putting a sizable proportion of its own core vote at risk. Perhaps it takes the view that these resisting voters are older, and that younger voters will be less interested in the party's past. Now, if that is Sinn Féin's interpretation, if that's his analysis, I think it's a deeply mistaken one. I do not believe this is a known known that time alone will remedy. Though Sinn Féin believes it is focused mainly on the future, and most of the spokespeople try to keep to that script, speaks just as much about his past, even more so than many of its detractors. And the Shropshire Sinn Féin is as yet to arrive in a settled view of that past. Its very highly simplified and romanticised portrayal of the Provos as freedom fighters who were forced into a conflict is ahistorical. It stands in stark contrast to the narrative of many other Republicans and nationalists, especially John Hume. John Hume experienced the same injustice and discrimination from a sectarian state, but he concluded that political action was the way to progress and unity. He went that road and didn't bother with the establishment of a provisional organisation that was infiltrated with British agents and preoccupied with intimidating fellow citizens who sought non-violent alternatives. Sinn Féin's other big known is perhaps more amenable to remedy, but once again, the party may worry that applying the necessary remedy risks alienating long-standing supporters. This second known is the worry in the minds of some wavering voters that Sinn Féin does not have the policies to back up their rhetoric. This second known is compounded by the degree to which Sinn Féin appears to have dialed back on its rhetorical tax on the government over the past 12 months. It is less strident in its opposition, though not less vocal. Though Sinn Féin talks a better game on housing, are their alternatives all that dramatic when you examine their specific proposals? Its alternative to Housing for All set a slightly shorter timeline, but the targets were no more ambitious. Indeed, going further on housing, Sinn Féin has proposed a refundable tax credit for renters and a complete ban on rent increases. Now, doubtless these would be popular with those already in rental accommodation, but how would such demand-side proposals help those trying to find affordable rental accommodation? Where are Sinn Féin's supply-side solutions? And by the way, this is a double-edged sword, because Sinn Féin faces into the next election as the main party of and for change. It is not just the alternative to the current government, it is the alternative to the two main parties that have long dominated Irish politics. A vote for Sinn Féin is a vote for change. Simply having Sinn Féin in government is a major change, but is a change of ministerial and pension and outlook sufficient? Now, I suspect this may actually be enough for some voters, and this is probably what's keeping the party, certainly into the high 20s and the low 30s. These voters see Fine Gael as squandering economic recovery by allowing the market to distribute the extra resources, thus causing a housing and accommodation crisis for many. And they see Fianna Fáil as doing no more than aiding the process by keeping Fine Gael in power. But that still leaves a group of voters who want to know now what Sinn Féin plans to do differently if it gets into government. They understand that the approach will be different, but what will that look like? What new policies will they implement? Is there a risk that a left-wing Sinn Féin-led government would frighten away investment? This latter point does appear to worry Sinn Féin itself, with the Business Post reporting earlier this month that, and I quote, in private briefings, business leaders are being told that life under Sinn Féin government will not be all that different. Now, that's not a message that Sinn Féin is handing out to the voters. But there has a ring of truth about it and does seem to mirror what Sinn Féin has been doing in government over the past two decades. Well, for the brief periods that the executive was operating during that time. In the north, Sinn Féin has held the housing and finance ministries, and the sky didn't fall in. The problem, though, is that not much happened either. Sinn Féin went into Stormont and little changed. Ironically, in Northern Ireland, Sinn Féin lauds the south's economic success as a model to follow, while down here it sees it the same model as a disaster that has failed us. These two views cannot both be right at the same time, but it doesn't stop Sinn Féin persisting with us. So, what's my too long, didn't read assessment of this column? Well, actually, you go back to the very first line in the very first beginning of this, and it's there. I think the most likely outcome of the next election, whenever it's held, is going to be another general election. Though Sinn Féin will be undoubtedly the biggest party in the next stall, politics is a number game, and I cannot see Sinn Féin being able to persuade sufficient other groups or parties or TDs to either join it in government or support it from the outside. Ah, I hear you cry. What about Fianna Fáil going in with Sinn Féin? Actually, I hear that a lot from Fine Gaelers. Surely there are enough Fianna Fáil TDs who want to extend their time as ministers or to get a chance to be junior ministers and that they're prepared to swallow hard and enter government with Sinn Féin. I'm sure there are, but I'm unconvinced that the two parties together will have sufficient seats to make this a viable option. And what I mean by that is, I think the combined total of Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil TDs would need to be so large, indeed so far excess of an overall majority, that it could allow for the defection of several Fianna Fáil TDs who would split from the party rather than go through the lobbies to elect Mary Lou MacDonald. Now, there could even be some Sinn Féin TDs who would see the return of Fianna Fáil ministers to office as a bridge too far. Either way, there would only have to be a handful of potential defectors to make this option absolutely impractical. Anyway, that's enough speculation for one column. Now, my next blog post will be my summer reading list, and that'll probably be followed by a look at the forthcoming constituency boundary review, which is due probably in early August. Now, I gave a preview of that a couple of weeks ago. Now, as I said at the outset, that I had delayed this for a week. And one of the reasons the main reason I did that is that over the last week, I've actually lost two very, very good friends. One of them, calling me political mentor isn't unfair. And that was the late Ben Briscoe TD, who was the Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin South Central for 37 years. Now, I was honoured and privileged to be his director of elections in two general elections, officially in the 1997 general election and unofficially at the 1992 one, which was the long count. And Ben exemplified public representation. I think anyone who was listening and were reading the tributes to him after his death would have been struck by the cross-party nature of them. I saw John Bruton write a very, very heartfelt tribute on LinkedIn. Gay Mitchell said some very, very nice words. But right across the board, right across the political divide, there was a great personal fondness and liking for Ben Briscoe. But more than that, there was a public fondness for him. There was a public liking of him. His name was synonymous with Dublin and with public service. And not everyone agreed with Ben on every single issue. He was liberal on some issues and very conservative, particularly on law and order issues. But Ben was seen to maintain his integrity at all times, be it from his resignation from the Public Accounts Committee when he was a very young TD, or as it is said, dissatisfaction with how that was looking into the money surrounding the arms trials, or his stance against Charlie Hoy, which was never as personal as some people would like to portray it. I remember at the time, and although I would have been seen as a hockey supporter and I would have been close to Ben, I remember asking him why he had decided to put the motion of no confidence down, and he had said, look, you can't be expecting first-time newly elected TDs to do this. I'm over 20 years in this place, and I know that it's my responsibility to do this, not to leave it to others. And that, I think, was a mark of his integrity and his courage. Ben will be very, very sadly lost. But he lived a long, very fulfilling and thoroughly enjoyable life. And I know from a very recent conversation with him, I spoke to him, I think we're probably in March on the phone for about 45 minutes. And no, he knew at that stage that he had a terminal illness. He knew that he had not long left. And he was so upbeat, so cheerful, so funny, so witty, and had not a regret. So, and I think that's a sign of a life well lived. The other loss was far more personal. It was one of my oldest and dearest friends, who was the same age as me, who had no great interest in politics, but also had a fundamentally good understanding of politics. And I vividly remember him in the run-up to the 2020 election telling me that Sinn Féin was going to do well and was going to do far better than I thought. And he was proved absolutely right. I'd known Peter for the time we were about 20, 21. We'd known each other for 40 years. And although we hadn't been in contact in recent years due to Peter's illnesses, we would have been counted as good friends. The news that he had died, when I got that text message, I was numb. So this is not, this blog post and this podcast aren't a tribute to them. But I just wanted to remember them and to say why I just didn't feel it was appropriate last week to do a podcast or a blog post. And I just wanted to take a week off. So anyway, so there we are. So Ben and Peter, I miss you greatly and I will cherish all your memories. And in both cases, your memory is a huge blessing. Anyway, that's this week's podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. And I will make a serious effort now to sit down and finish my summer reading list and to get that out as soon as possible, definitely before the middle of next week. So anyway, hope you enjoyed this. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll talk to you again soon. Goodbye.